So, right, so even though it's Parshat Noach this week, I found this Bereshit, this course, very meaningful. And I thought we would take this. So, and also I felt that it's relevant for the whole year. So we're going to explore that. So first of all, we have the text, Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et haaretz. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. Now there's an intriguing Rashi on this verse. So let's just have a look at the Rashi, Bereshit. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak said, Lo haya tzarich la'tchil et ha-Torah. It did not need to begin the Torah, Eila, except from Mehachodesh Hazelechem. From the verse, this month is for you. Now the verse, this month is for you, is in the book of Shemot. It is in Parshat Bo. And it is when Moses is telling the Jewish people that there's going to be the 10th plague. And before then, they have to... he explains how they are Mekadesh HaChodesh, how they designate the month, the new moon of the month, and it's going to be the month of Nisan, and he's giving them various days in the month of Nisan when they should do this and they should do that, and on the night of the 15th of Nisan, which is the Seder night, they will be going free from Egypt. So that's the beginning of the mitzvot of the Torah. And you have the idea that the Torah is a book of mitzvot. So if it's a book of mitzvot, why doesn't it just begin with the first mitzvah? You can discuss and say, look, there are other mitzvot which are earlier in the Torah, like pru or ravu, increase and multiply, not to eat from the gid hanasher, not to eat from the sinew of the thigh is in the book of Genesis. But the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people as a whole, like as Jewish people. Moshe is giving the Jewish people a rule, the law, what to do. Now, so that's the question of Rabbi Yitzchak. Why doesn't the Torah begin with that? So then he answers it, Uma tam, shehi mitzvah rishona, because that's the first command, shenitzdavu by Yisrael, that the whole Jewish people was commanded. What's the reason that it begins with the word Bereshit? Mishum, because koach ma'asav higid la'amo. God told the power of his actions to his nation, latet lahem nachalat goyim, to give them the inheritance of the nations, which is a verse in Psalms. She'im yomru umot ha'olam li'Yisrael. Because if the nations of the world say to the Jewish people, listim atem, you are bandits, she'kvashtem arzot shiva goyim, you have taken possession of the lands of the seven nations who were in the land of Canaan. So then the Jewish people answer them, heim omrim lahem, they say to them, Kol ha'aretz shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the whole world belonged to God. Hubra, he created it, as we have in our Sedra, about the creation. Unetana la'asher yasha be'inav, he gave whichever country to whoever he wanted. Birutzono netana lehem, by his will he gave it first to the seven nations. Ubirtzono netala mehem, and by his will he took it from them, unetana lanu, and gave it to us. All right, now that's the opening Rashi on the Chumash, which has got a lot of, this was written in the 11th century. Interestingly, it's before there was a wave of emigration to Israel. I think beginning around 1135, there was a wave of emigration from Europe to Israel. And Jewish people coming back to Israel from Europe. There'd been the Jewish people in Israel, then they went from Israel to Europe, whether they were taken as slaves by the Romans or different factors. But 1135, we have a movement back. Of course, there were Jews in Israel anyway, as we know, because the first crusade in 1096, the Jews were accused by the Christians of helping the Muslims, which might well have been true. And they killed them. They killed every Jew in Jerusalem that they could find. And so so there were certainly Jews in Israel at that point anyway. But then, my memory doesn't deceive me, in 1135 there was a wave of like spiritual people, rabbis, leaving Europe and going to Israel and strengthening or setting up the communities which later became famous communities, Jerusalem, Tzfat, Tiberia, and Hebron, which were centers of Jewish scholarship throughout the Middle Ages. That's okay, so that is the opening of this discourse. So we're now going to turn to the actual Maimer. Now, in order to hear the Maimer, the discourse, it's a very spiritual thing. And so there is a Maimer melody to help us open our hearts to the discourse itself. Amen. Oh ya 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 ba ya bum bo ya ya da ba da ya bum bo ah ya ba ya bum bo ha ya da ba ya ya da ba yo ya ho ya yere namba ya ya yo ya yere namba ya ma yo ha yere namba ya yere namba ho ya ya ba 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 ha ha ya ba ya ba 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 ho ya ba bo ya ba bo Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve et haaretz. Right, so looking at the beginning, this is a discourse that the Lubavitcher Rebbe said 5726, which is 1965, and it has not been edited by the Rebbe. There's a team of scholars who have added footnotes and a commentary around the side, but it's an it's edited by them, but it's not edited by the Rebbe. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Now, the Rebbe Rashab, Reb Shalom Dov Be'er, who passed away in 1920, and he wrote very, very extensive series of discourses. So this is a discourse of 1916. 1 second, I'm just going to straighten. 1960. Yes, footnote 2. You see, it says there, it's a discourse that begins Bereshit Bara, Tafresh Ayin Vav. Tafresh Ayin Vav is 1916. So he wrote in that, and that discourse was then collected in a very famous collection of discourses by the Rashab. By Reb Shalom Dov Be'er. So he quotes Perush Rashiza, the commentary of Rashi. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak said, Lo haya tzarich la'tchil et ha-Torah le'machodesh hazeh lechem chuli. It was only necessary for the Torah to begin with the words, this month is for you, etc. Umatam patak bereshit. Why does it begin with bereshit? And then quoting, Mishum koach ma'asav higid la'amom. Because the power of his actions, he told his people, "Latek lehem nachlat goyim," to give to them the inheritance of nations. She'im yomru, he's just paraphrasing. She'im yomru umot ha'alom. If the nations of the world would say, "Li Yisrael," to the Jewish people, "Listim atem, your bandits," etc. Hey, omrim lehem, they say to them, "Kol ha'aretz shel hakadosh baruch hu," the whole world belongs to God. He created it and he gave it to whom he wanted, etc. Right? So he's just sketching this commentary by Rashi. He said, 60-70% of it, but his hearers are familiar with it. Now, Umamshech, then the Rebbe Rashab, in his discourse, continues, having quoted this Rashi that we just read. Ube'emet, and in truth, nifla hadeva. It's actually a very strange thing. The fact that the creation of heaven and earth is written in the Torah, surely he's like returning to the question that Rashi began with. Hare Torah hi leshon hora. Torah means instruction. V'hi sefer dinim. It's a book of laws. Uma shayach inyan b'riyat ha'olam. What is the relevance of the creation of the world? Shenema b'Torah, that it should be written in the Torah. So it's in fact, he's agreeing. Rabbi Shalom Dober, the fifth Rebbe, is saying, you know what? It really is a strange thing. The Torah is a book of laws teaching us how to live. It's God's commands to us. So what actually is the purpose of telling us this story of creation? V'hainu shelo yitachen lomar. He doesn't accept this excuse, as it were. Shebiglal shetzarich letaret ta'anat umot ha'olam, that we have to answer the question of the nations of the world. Lechein nichtav b'Torah inyan shelo shayach l'Torah. He doesn't think that something should be written, or this is the way he's asking the question, why should something be written in the Torah just because of the need to give some answer to an argument? So you must say, he refuses to accept the idea that the account of creation is just there because of some argument between the Jews and the non-Jews. You must say, shegam inyan zeh shayach l'Torah. You must say the account of creation is in fact a basic part of Torah. And so that's the question. In which way is the account of creation a basic part of Torah? So if you're saying the Torah is a book of laws, and you got the question, why then is the account of creation? So let's see, what's the reason for creation? Quite apart from this sort of political issue. You know, the nations of the world will say this, or they'd say that, and we've got an answer. Okay, we could get that from somewhere else. Why does it have to be in the Torah? Gamza v'gam tzarich lavin, we also have to understand in sort of broader terms, ma'wi inyan latet lahem nachlat goyim. What does it mean giving them the inheritance of the nations? Ma'wi inyan shenatana la'asheh yashah be'inav. What does it mean God gave it to the one who he wanted, that was straight in his eyes? All right, so further questions. Now, the way in which a discourse works is that the Rebbe quotes, the Rebbe is the seventh Rebbe, and we have this style of Hasidic discourse all the way going back. To be honest, it's an ancient style. It's the style of the Midrash.
Okay.
Not every kind of Midrash. So if you study Midrash Rabbah, so Bereshit and Shemot are like straight interpretative Midrashim. They function as a commentary.
Mm-hmm.
But if you study Vayikra Rabbah, Vayikra Rabbah is different. And Vayikra Rabbah is more like a Hasidic discourse.
Oh, right.
Vayikra Rabbah begins with a verse from the Torah. That means from that Sedra.
Mm-hmm.
And then it quotes another verse. Usually from Kohelet, Mishle, Book of Job. And then it goes through a whole discussion and presentation of some profound idea, and then it gets back to the verse in the Torah.
Oh, wow.
So they're like artistic pieces, you could say, you know. And these discourses have the same pattern, that it starts with the verse, then it presents a question. And there's a wisdom, a level of a teaching, which is then produced, like the verse from Job and the commentary that the Midrash gives, which then brings you back to understand what the verse is saying. So here we've got the verse and we've got the question, and it's like opening a window, and now we're going to see what we see in the window. Now, in order to understand, so that's the next part of the discourse. Ot bet, a paragraph 2, Umamshech b'mayma, it continues with the discourse. Shelahavin ze yesh la'aktim tchila, in order to understand this, what is the account of creation doing in the Torah? What is the effect it should be having on us? How are we supposed to relate to it, given that the Torah is a book of law and of teaching? So to understand this, we first should consider ha'inyan dekel deyot Hashem. There's a verse, God is a God of deyot. Now that is like mind or opinion. And there's this intriguing statement. God has deyot. He has perceptions, perspectives. Let's translate that in this case as perspective. God has perspectives. And the way this is explained in Hasidic thought, that this means Shehein Shtei Deyot. There are two perspectives. Dat Elyon, the upper perspective, Udat Tachton, and the lower perspective. Dat Elyon, what is the upper perspective? Well, the upper perspective is more difficult. The upper perspective is a sort of divine perspective. Shalemaila yesh, that above, let's say in heaven. Yeah, there's heaven and earth. The spiritual and the physical. So what's the reality? Our normal physical way of looking at things is that physicality is real, right? Here I am, a physical person in a physical world. And then beyond, there is some kind of spiritual realm, heaven. Earth is tangible and heaven is intangible. And that's the beyond, the odala, and that's the realm of the divine, of the spiritual, the holy. So it's like, what's tangible and what's intangible? So this is actually the lower opinion. The lower opinion is easier. It's our opinion. The lower opinion is that here in this physical world, this is the reality. And beyond, in the spiritual realm, that is the that's the beyond. That's the dimension that you have to think about, as it were. You know, it's not obvious. But the upper opinion is the opposite. The upper opinion is Shalemaila Yesh. That the reality is on the upper level. Heaven is real. Earth, lamata, ayin, below. Now that needs thinking about. Earth is a concealment. The world is a concealment of godliness. And what is it? And so the mysterious realm is earth from the upper point of view. The opposite, the obvious, is godliness, holiness, spirituality. And once you get to the realm of the physical, that's something which is very intriguing and distant. But that tachton, and the lower opinion, line 24, shalamata ye shalamayla ayin, is that below is the physical reality and above is beyond. Now, so we're saying that God has both these perspectives. And that's the point that the discourse emphasizes. Umekom makom, nonetheless, ain't stira beinem. There's no contradiction between these two perspectives. Now, that's a very fascinating idea, that you can have two opposite perspectives, but they fit together. This is all the time in Hasidic thought, I would say, that you have very different perspectives, but they can all sit together because, you know, one is this way and the other one is that way. That's, they somehow fit together. Because they both apply to the divine radiance itself. Because that's what's written over the next page. Kel Deot Hashem. That God has both. This is a verse in the book of Samuel. God has both these perspectives. It's talking about two different aspects of the beyond, the spiritual beyond, and at this point it goes into a sort of more complicated way of analyzing the beyond that I think we're going to miss. We're going to go to the end of this paragraph. We're going to go to the beginning of the next paragraph. But basically what it's saying is that there are two different perspectives which are both within the divine and they are the source of the way in which we human beings think that here is reality, physical reality, and beyond is the spiritual. And on the other hand, there's a higher perspective that spirituality is real. And everything else, which is on a lower level, that's what's unreal. Now, there is a sense in which those two perspectives apply to us as human beings. Even though it's starting off telling us these are two divine perspectives, in fact, we as human beings are able to relate to this ourselves because we also have to have two perspectives. Now, the two perspectives we have are slightly different, and they're described in the next paragraph. Now, have any of you heard of, and I think you might have done, Yehuda Ilah, the upper unity, and Yehuda Tata, and the lower unity?
Yeah, it's Tanya Book 2, isn't it?
That's right, absolutely right. So Tanya Book 2 tells us that in the Shema, it's quoting the Zohar, that in the Shema, the first line of the Shema is the upper unity, and the second line of the Shema, Baruch Shem, is the lower unity. Now, how would you define the upper unity?
It's the upper unity. Oh, it's amazing. It's that Hashem is everything and everything is Hashem.
And what's the lower unity?
That's kind of more that creation comes about through Malchut. And it goes from the Sefirot of Absolute. And then when he gets to Malchut, that's where kind of creation comes into existence.
All right, you could speak about it that way. Let's try and put it in simpler terms. The upper unity, as Tehillah Bina said, that God is in everything, and so if God is in everything, you can focus on the godliness. And you could say, you know what? Ein oid mubado. There's nothing apart from God. There's only God. Because you start contemplating the world, and as it says in the second part of Tanya, everything exists simply because there is a flow of divine life force making it exist, making this table exist, making the house, the sky, the earth. So it's a flow of divine life force making it all exist, and we can focus on the divine, and we can say, Ein od milvado, there's nothing apart from God. And in fact, when we put our hand over our eyes, and we say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hear O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. As it explains it there in Tanya, it's not that we are negating, you know, some people might believe in three gods or in different numbers of gods, two gods. We are saying there's only God. There's only God. There's nothing else. Ein od. So that's the upper unity. So it doesn't give room for a world. The lower unity is that there is a world, but the world is infused with godliness. So the lower unity, like, you know, it lets, it's mild enough, if you like, so that you're able to see the world. Now, so that's what he's going to do in the second paragraph. He's going to translate the upper perspective and the lower perspective, which are two divine perspectives, and we've missed out a paragraph which gives us a whole complicated Kabbalistic explanation of them. But he's going to translate them into the upper unity way of looking, which is our perspective now, and the lower unity. And the discourse is about the interplay between these two ways of looking, the upper unity and the lower unity, in our lives. And it presents a very interesting framework that we could see everything we do almost as a kind of interplay between upper unity and lower unity. All right, so let's see how that works. So this is line 10 on page Vav. Umamshech b'mayma, the Rebbe Rashab continues in his discourse. Hold on 1 second. My granddaughter is supposed to be walking over, and I'm just worried that there's some problem. No. Umamshech b'mayma, and it says in the discourse of the Rebbe Rashab, of the fifth Rebbe, the kashem sheyesh shtei deot l'mayla. Just as there are two perspectives above, Bechinat Da'at Elyon V'Da'at Tachton, the upper perspective and the lower perspective. K'mo chein tzichot niyot ba'adam gamkin. There also has to be in the person, shtei ha'deyot, these two perspectives. Here comes a very, very interesting statement in the square brackets. Bahainu, that means, Lefisha ha'adam talum mikol ha'inyanim, the person is composed of all the aspects shebaseda yishtal shalut, which are in the downchaining of worlds, the kabbalistic analysis of worlds, milamayla mayla, from the very highest level ad lamata mata, to the very lowest level. So whatever dimension the Kabbalah, Hasidic teachings might describe, there is some sense in which it's in us as human beings as well. And so what is the equivalent of the upper and lower perspectives? Vehein yichuda ila, they are the upper unity, the upper perspective. Vyichuda tata, and the lower unity, the lower perspective. Vehu inyan hayichud da Hashem and Elohim. And this is, in fact, the unity of two aspects of the divine. You see, we're talking about a unity. Now, what is a unity between A and B? Yeah, there's something we're talking about being unified. So it's a unity within the divine, and the two aspects of the divine, one is Yudke Vavke, the tetragrammaton, and the other is Elohim, the divine name Elohim. Now, you see, the point about the divine name, Yudke Vavke, first of all, it's in the singular. We all know God is one. Kabbalistic thought could be analyzed in terms of a very simple question. How can God, who is one, be manifested and create a world? Would you like a drink?
I'm not sure I can.
What?
So, don't worry. Sorry for interrupting.
It's okay. But would you like a drink of water? Here we are. Thank you so much. Thank you.
I'm not sure I can drink it, actually. I might spit it all out.
Don't worry. Here's a tissue, just in case you do.
So the two names are not the same.
Well, they denote, they express different aspects of the divine. You see, there are lots of divine names, and there's a medieval Kabbalistic work called Sharei Ora by Rabbi Meir ibn Jikatilya, which writes about different divine names and their spiritual significance.
And did they say what the aspects are?
Yeah, he has, like, if I remember right, he has like a chapter on each name. You know, Aleph Lamed means this and that and the other. Yudke Vavke means this, that and the other.
Elohim. Severity, is it?
Yudke? Well, that's a very good point. You see, Yudke Vavke can be spoken of as the attribute of mercy, Rachamim, and Elohim is the attribute of severity. So there are a number of different ways of understanding these many divine names. And one of those ways is that Havaya, the tetragrammaton, represents the single oneness of God beyond any kind of distinctions. And Elohim, which is a name in the plural, That relates to nature and existence. Gematria. That's right. It's got the same gematria as hateva, as nature.
86.
Yeah, have you ever noticed that? Elohim and hateva. So let's just...
31.
So I'm writing a kuf instead of a hay. One second, this isn't a very good pen. So we've got 1, 30, 5, 10, and 40, right? 40, 50, 55, 85, 86, which is 86. And then we have Hateva, which is nature with a definite article, which is 5, 9, 2, and 70. 72, 81, 86, right? So that link between nature and Elohim is something which is often discussed, and it expresses the immanence of the divine within the physical world and within this world of multiplicity and variety. Like the world is a world of seemingly infinite variety. There's a Hasidic teaching, a discourse, I think it talks about, if you look at every leaf on a certain kind of tree, let's say an oak tree, so every leaf, although it's got a similar pattern, it's different to every other leaf. So you got, how many leaves are on one oak tree? 1,000, 3,000. So in all those leaves, each leaf is different. Then you consider how many oak trees there are in the whole world. And the assumption is you're not going to find two leaves exactly the same. They're all going to be different. There's a kind of a quality of infinite, of boundless variety. So that is Elohim. That's the divine force making the world, which is imminently within the world. And the divine name Yudke Vavke is also needed to make the world, but it's a transcendent name. It's beyond, and it's on that level, that's the higher level. So when we talk about the unity, we're talking really about a unity of these two names. Now, it is possible for the unity of these two names, we're now thinking of it in very practical terms, as in fact it talks about it in the Shai, in the second section of Tanya, chapter 7. It talks about if you imagine these names themselves and you make them interleave. You take one letter from one name, then the first letter from one name, then the first letter from the other name, then back to the other, you know, like alternately.
Yeah.
Now, if you look in the little commentary at the bottom, on line 82, which is three lines from the bottom of the page, on the left-hand side, yeah? Page 12, it gives you a way in which the names, the two names, sorry, there's another jump.
Yeah,
sorry.
You can see.
We have to have another jump. So let's go back into the text of the discourse and then we'll get up to that. Buhuin yan yichud davai Elohim, that's line 17, that's the unity of Yudke Vavke and Elohim. And the unity can be in two different ways, of the Yehudi Ilah, of the upper unity, Yehudi Tato, and the lower unity. And that is the interleaving of two names, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, and Yudke Vavke. Vushilov Havai Ba'adne and Yudke Vavke in Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. So in other words, you can take the two names, the transcendent name of God, Aleph Yudke Vavke, or the immanent name of God, which is the equivalent of Elohim, like Elohim is Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, and you can put them together. When you have the Aleph Dalet Nun Yud somehow fitted into the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, so that the Yud of Yud Kei Vav Kei comes first, that is the Yud Kei Vav Kei taking power, as it were, over the Avni, and that's the upper unity. Now, if you look at line 82, you've got it written out the way that is. Yud, and then Aleph, Hey, and then Dalet, Vav, and then Nun.
Where's this?
Line 82 in the little writing.
Why do they need to have stronger and weaker, just for want of words, but one Midgaber on the other?
Because these are the two ways, the two perspectives. When you have Yud Kei Vav Kei is stronger, then the focus is on the transcendent.
Why is it stronger? In what way?
Because, well, if we just look at it in very human psychological terms, we are focusing on the Yud Kei Vav Kei, rather than looking at the details of the world around one. We're looking at the transcendent oneness.
Yeah.
And so a graphic way of illustrating that is by conceiving of these two names. And the two names are in such a way that the Yud comes first, and that's like a graphic way of thinking of the transcendent. Yud Kei Vav Kei is the focus of our attention.
But is it not the two names are the Ila'a, are the top level of the spirituality?
Well, no, they include everything. They include all levels. You see, the Aleph Dalet Nun Yud reaches right down into the lowest level of the world. Like the name Elohim, Hateva, it comes right down into the most simple and animal aspects of nature.
Okay.
It's Yud Kei Vav Kei that is beyond
okay.
the transcendent.
Okay.
Okay.
Someone must have decided it.
Well, we have here an interplay. You know, on the one hand, you can say, oh, all Kabbalistic ideas are revealed by Elijah the prophet. You know, we can take it that way. But it's also a profound sensitivity to the nature of existence. Yeah. That we can look at existence in two different ways. We can, yeah. It's like what it says in Tanya. Either you see everything is God and there's nothing else. And so the whole of existence is just absorbed in the godliness.
Yeah.
Or you focus on the details of reality. I mean, to take, I haven't seen this quoted in this way in Hasidic teaching, but the fact is that after 120 years, when a person leaves the world, it's a kind of an ideal that they should say the Shema as they're leaving the world. Right? That's a very common idea and ideal. And so what does it mean, saying the Shema at that moment? One is going away from the world of illusion into the world of truth.
Yeah.
It's, in fact, I think the Rebbe had a secretary, Rabbi Chodakov, and his last words were, he was very ill. First of all, he was in 770, I think, and he had some kind of attack. And he said, get the Kohanim out.
Oh.
He was worried that if he dies, the Kohanim are not supposed to be in a room with a dead person. But he actually survived that attack. But sometime later, he really did die. And I believe his last words were, he said in Yiddish, "Siz shen zeit avekts again von alma de shikra und niskare veren zu oilem ha'emes." It's time to leave the world of falsehood and come closer to the world of truth.
Wow.
That's where his last word.
That's amazing. What a guy. Wow.
Yeah, he was very special. So so that's... he once talked to me. I had a conversation with him in his room at the behest of the Rebbe. The Rebbe told me to talk to him about communicating the seven Noachide laws.
That's a difficult one, isn't it? Because obviously Jews are used to hearing about mitzvot, but, you know, how do you communicate them that to non-Jews?
Well, that's the challenge.
Wow. So,
so that, you see, coming close to the world of truth, it's like, you know, leaving behind the all the limitations of the world of complexities of this physical realm, and so that's the upper unity. It's like focusing on the other unity, you know, the upper unity. Whereas, and that's why graphically it can be expressed as it is there on line 82 at the beginning of the line, where the yud of the name Yud Kei Vav Kei comes first. Yeah. Now he looks at the other way round. V'chasher, if we turn over the page, V'chasher shiluv hu havaya ba'adni, and when it's the other way round, that the interleaving is the Yud Kei Vav Kei fitted into the name Aleph Daled Nun Yud, harizuit gabrut adni alavaya, then the name Aleph Daled Nun Yud takes precedence over the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, v'zeh b'chinat Yehuda Tata, and that is the lower unity, and we have an illustration of it in line 2 of the little commentary on page 7. You see line 2 at the beginning of the line, and he gives, first is the Aleph of Adni, then the Yud of Yud Kei Vav Kei, then the Dalet, right? So in other words, you see the world. The fact that you see the divine name Aleph Daled Nun Yud, that Aleph Daled Nun Yud comes first, indicates how you're actually seeing the world. You see a physical world. You're in a physical world. It's an issue. You know, have you sorted out whether you can park your car in this part of the street or not? You know, like, have you filled out your tax form? Oh. You know, the world of reality. That's but in that world is godliness.
Somewhere.
Everywhere. Possibly him, but everywhere. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
yes. Yes.
Yeah.
This little combination of names, you find that in Svadi Sidurim, yeah. You find it all over. Sometimes they have a hay, and inside the hay is this this combination of names. Yeah. Because the Svadi Siddur is written according to Kabbalistic concepts of Rabbi Isaac Luria.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, so therefore we have the idea that these two different aspects, which are the two divine perspectives, the Das Elyon and the Das Tachton, the upper perspective, the lower perspective, they are there in us as human beings, in the sense, and incidentally, this is something that is universal. It's for every human being. It's not only for the Jewish people. Every person has the possibility of looking at the world in these two ways. And that's the significance of what it means to be a human being, to be able to perceive existence in these two ways, to be able to perceive that on the one hand there's only God, that's the upper unity, and then on the other hand, the idea that there is a world but it's suffused by godliness, and to be able to think about that, and it's sort of a tangible way of expressing and thinking about it by putting together these two names and putting them interleaving them either in this way or in that way. The reason I say that it's something relevant for every human being is particularly because when the second part of Tanya was translated into English and published originally as a little book on its own, the Rebbe said, this was in the 60s, it's very nice, it's been translated into English, so now non-Jews will be able to read it.
Oh, really?
You know, so it's something relevant to every person. Now then we come, line 2 on page 9. Now we also have these two perspectives, the upper unity and the lower unity, the upper perspective, the lower perspective. They're in the Torah. The Torah also has these two ways. Now the Torah is often called food, bread. Like we learn Torah, we have to understand Torah. So like we eat bread, and the bread goes into us, and with the help of God makes us healthy. So in the same way, we devour the food of Torah. But there are different kinds of food. There is lechem min ha'avah, hu inyan lechem min ha'aretz. There's food from the earth, that's regular food, right? The crops grow, and you harvest the crop, and you make bread. Galya de Torah, that's the revealed Torah. Revealed Torah, the Mishnah, the Talmud, the code of law, telling us what to do, how to do it, when, but not why. It's telling us the what, but not the why. And then there's lechem min hashamayim. There's the food from heaven, like the man, the manna that they ate in the desert. A spiritual kind of food. Pnimiyut Torah, the inwardness of Torah, which is more likely to give us the why of what we do. And in general, to introduce us to a spiritual realm beyond our physical limitations. See, the revealed Torah, to a great extent, is not worried by our physical limitations, because we are physical people and we have to eat. We have to know what blessing to make on the food and when we are allowed to eat, and are we allowed to eat this food or that food? Can we mix them together or not? It's talking about our physical limitations and how we can make our physical limitations into a way to connect with God. But the inwardness of Torah is taking us to another level. Even if it's talking about ourselves as people, it's usually talking not about our physical selves, but our psychological self. And then it goes into our spiritual self, and the way we connect with the divine, and the way the divine is the essence of reality, and we go further and further into a spiritual realm. So that's these two dimensions within Torah. You see, the food from the earth and the food from heaven. Now here comes a very interesting passage that on Shabbat we had a whole discussion about what it means. Ubichlalut yoter, in more general terms, hinelechem min haaretz, the food from the ground, that means the like more simple and earthly level of Torah. Is what was given immediately after going out of Egypt. Moses gave the Jews various laws that they had to keep coming out of Egypt, but very simple, straightforward laws. Shabbat, very straightforward dimension. Velechem min hashamayim, and the food from heaven. Hu klaluto inyan de matan Torah. That is the entirety of the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. Now, the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai, which includes the time that Moses was on the mountains, forty days and nights, there is a very, very profound and intriguing statement, which is in the Talmud. It's repeated a number of times, different parts of the Talmud, is that every single law, every single detail of law, afilu kol ma shetalmid vatik, even something that a seasoned student would realize as a new discovery, atid lechadesh, we'll see as a chidush, something new, in his discussion with his teacher, right? So you can imagine a clever student and a great teacher, and they're discussing together, and the student suddenly comes to a new idea. Kvar ne'emar le-Moshe b'Sinai, was already told to Moses on Mount Sinai. So in other words, Mount Sinai includes everything. And so it's as if that is the lechem min hashamayim. That's the food from heaven. So all this like amazing variety and intricacy and profundity that there is in Torah, and it's just exquisite. You know, there's the verses of the Torah, then the Mishnah, and then the Gemara, and then the Tosafot, and then the Rishonim, the early sages, explaining them like the Rambam, and then the later sages. And you've got these intricate, fascinating concepts. All that given on Mount Sinai, all that is the, and it's like boundless. That's the food from heaven in the Torah. And a sort of much more simple, basic facts, that's the food from earth. You know, so you could say the simple rules of basic Jewish life in very simple terms, that's how I understand it. That is the food from the earth and all the fascinating complexity of Torah, not only of the inner spiritual Hasidic dimensions, but even in the halachic and Talmudic dimensions, that's all the Torah from heaven. That's the food from heaven. So in other words, we've again got these two modes. One mode is the simple lower mode, and the other is the subtle spiritual mode. And what this discourse is saying is that those two modes are there with us all the time. They're in all aspects of our lives. So it's there in us, in our contemplative life. It's there in the Torah, in the different dimensions of Torah, whether it's revealed Torah and Hasidic teachings, or whether it is simple rules of Torah versus all the multiple complexities of Torah. It's there.
Remember where, but I think I heard that when Moshe was learning Torah, the days he was learning the Shabbat Chatav, and at night he was learning the oral form.
Yeah, right? That's in the Bar Mitzvah Maimah. When a boy is Bar Mitzvah, he says a beautiful discourse which has some very profound ideas in it, and that's one of those ideas. Yeah, yeah. Okay, now let's go to section Gimel, please. Line 15 on page Zayin. Umasayim b'maimah. Now, the Rebbe Rashab, you see, all this is the Rebbe's discussion of a previous discourse said in 1916. Said 101 years ago. No, 100 years ago. Exactly 100 years ago. Yeah, it happens to be 100 years ago. Yeah, I didn't realize it. So he ends the discourse in 1916, shall pize yuva. No, sorry, it's 1915. It's ayin vav. So ayin vav after January would be 1916, but in October, in November, it's 1915. So it is 101 years. All right. So he ends that discourse. The Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Rebbe, ends the discourse. Sha'al pize yuvan. According to this, we can understand Mashekatav Rashi, what Rashi wrote. Lo haya tzarich la'tchilat ha'Torah elu ma'achodesh hazeh lechem. The Torah should have just begun from this month. It's for you. In other words, with the laws of the Torah. The hine, because he's now going to read this question into the discussion we've just had. The hine bereshit, on the one hand, the account of creation, and v'hachodesh, and the rules of the new moon, on the other hand, laws, heim shnei ofanei hanhaga shelamayla, they are the two styles of divine conduct. Shemehem yecholim leida gadlut haboreh, and from then we can know the greatness of the Creator. On the one hand, hanhagativit, on the other, on the one hand, nature. Nature is what Bereshit is all about. Bereshit describes how God created the world, and it's telling us about nature. Nature comes from God. Vahanhaganisit. And the other style of divine conduct is miracles. That's what the book of Exodus is about. That's what going out of Egypt is all about. Miracles. As it says, he quotes a fascinating book by Rabbi Yitzhak Arama called Akedat Yitzhak, a kind of an encyclopedic work of Jewish thought, late medieval work. Shehem al derech shnei ha'anyanim de'dat helyon be'dat tachton, and they are like the upper perspective and the lower perspective. The lower perspective is nature, and the upper perspective is miracles. Yichud ilah, the upper unity, yichud tata, and the lower unity. Bereshit hu inyan hanhagat ha'teva, the account of creation is about nature. B'china da tachton, the lower perspective, Yehuda tata, the lower unity. And that's the very fascinating thing, that when we see that Elohim is the numerical value of nature, and you consider nature and the spiritual dimension, that's the lower aspect, that's the lower unity, and that's what Bereshit bara Elohim, God created the heaven and the earth, that's what it's all about. Shezeu inyano shel chodesh Tishrei, by the way, he says, that's what the month of Tishrei that we're just leaving is all about. Shehu's man briyat olam, which is the time of the creation of the world. Liot bevchinat hanhagat ha'teva, so that the world should run in a natural way, the way that God has created it with its natural laws. V'hachodesh hazeh, and this month should be for you, which is the month of Nisan, Chodesh Nisan, hu inyan hanhagat shelamayinu me'ateva. That's a way of divine conduct which is above nature, b'china dat elyon yichudi ilah, the upper perspective, the upper unity. Kedeita b'midrash, over the page, as it says in the midrash, it's going to quote a verse which will delay us. We're going to move on to line 4 on page Chet. When God created the world, he set up nature. And when it came to going out of Egypt, he broke the rules of nature. The miracles of going out of Egypt broke the rules of nature. Now, it's two aspects of God. God creates nature, and God breaks the rules of nature. Like all the miracles of going out of Egypt. Now, line 5. That's why Rashi says that we should have begun the Torah, God should have begun the Torah, from the words, this month should be for you, since the nature of Torah in general is God's perspective, the higher perspective. The Torah should have begun with its divine, miraculous perspective. The upper perspective. Okay, so that's the question. The Torah is expressing God. That's what the Torah is about. The Torah is not a geography book or a book of physics. It's about God. So God is about miracles. It's about the high, it's about spiritual things, it's about holiness. So we should have begun with holiness. What's holiness? This month should be for you. The first mitzvah in the Torah, the whole account of going out of Egypt, that's holiness. So why does the Torah begin with nature instead of holiness? All right, let's see the next paragraph, line 10. Umar tam patach bebereshit, Rashi said, what's the reason that the Torah begins with the account of the creation of the world? Mishum, and he quotes this pasuk, koach ma'asav higid la'amo, the power of his actions he told to his people. Koach ma'asav, the power of his actions, that means haynu akoch v'ashlita la'teva. That's the power God has to rule nature. V'u'inyan haberurim milamata lamayla, and that is the whole idea of sifting, living in the world as a physical person in a physical world, and trying to sift through the struggles of life, bevchinat da'at tachton, in a way of the lower way of understanding, the lower perspective, and that's what life really is, that we're working through the lower perspective. In fact, nature is a reasonable way to begin the Torah, because that's where we are. We are in nature. We are part of nature. We have our natural own physical bodies and everything around it that we have to deal with, and we're struggling with that to keep God's laws. That's the way in which we start off. V'hatam shegam inyan zeh nichtav b'Torah. The reason why this is also written in the Torah, as well as the miracles and so on, and the actual laws. Ki af al pi sheberurim d'dat tachton. Even though the sifting of this lower dimension, Hema Berurim the Shem Ban, they are the sifting which comes from the Sfira Malchut, the Sfira of kingship, which here is called by its name Ban, which is the numerical value 52, which is when you write the name Yudke Vavke in a certain way, Yud Vav Dalad, hey. There's a certain way of writing that it comes out to the numerical value 52. There's another way of writing and it comes out to the numerical value 45. So the name 52 is like the Sfira Malchut. So mikol makom, nonetheless, gam inyan zeh hu al yedei ha'arat shem ma. Also, this is through the illumination of the higher name ma. V'lechein ne'ma inyan zeh b'Torah. And that's why this nature, God creating the physical world, a man and woman in the world, and Adam and Eve, and the whole complexity. They didn't have clothes. This, that, the snake, the struggle of life. That's there in the Torah. Shehi bechinat shema, because the Torah is in itself the quality of ma, which is giving us this divine inspiration. That's why nature is in the Torah.
Is Ma 52?
No, Ma is 45, numerical value Adam. And that is also the name Yudke Vavke, but on a higher level than the name Yudke Vavke, which is in Ban in 52, which relates to Malchut. So the point is that there's the world of nature, and we're in the world of nature, but that nature is written in the Torah so as to give us input from the Torah, so that we as men and women in the physical world are able to have a divine inspiration and input, so that we're able to connect with God in this physicality. That's what it means, the whole world belonged to God. And he gave it to whoever he wanted. The giving is from the name Ma, from the higher name. The flow from above to below. And that's also the idea of who is straight in his eyes. Like the verse which speaks about God and man, as it were, looking at each other face to face. So there we have this interplay of, within the Torah, that there is on the one hand the natural dimension, and on the other hand the miraculous. And the point about the natural dimension, that natural dimension is also infused with godliness. That's what the Yehuda Tata is all about. That's what the lower unity is all about. There is a world, but the world also includes within it, and that's really its essence, is the divine life force which is within it. So the fact that nature is in the Torah, and at the beginning of the Torah, it starts off by describing the creation of the entire world, and everything that's in it, and us as physical people, and it focuses on that quality that we have, and then the idea that Adam and Eve, they have to work the ground, and Eve is going to bear children. It's, the reality of existence is all infused with the godliness which is there by the fact that it's there inside the Torah. Now, line 22, we're going to finish in a minute. The Yeshlama, and one can suggest, the beginning of the year, we begin the Jewish year, we begin reading Bereshit, which talks about the way nature works. Leficha az, because then matchil seida avodah b'olam, then we begin our service of God in the world, be'inyan ha-behorim, in terms of sifting the sparks which are in physicality, milamata lamayla, from below to above. Va'akoach lezeh, and the power that we are given to achieve this, hu al yedei zeh shekorin inyan zeh b'torah. It's because we read this in the Torah. The fact that we read in the Torah about the sun, moon, and stars, and the vegetation, and the this, and the that, and the animals, and the fish, and the person, that is all to give us the power to serve God through this immense physicality around us. Shegam inyan haberurim. Okay, and let's go on to the next page. Finally, the last four lines here, the top four lines. This is all hanetinat koach la'avodat haberurim b'meshech kol ha'shana. So our reading of this in the Torah, in Bereishit, gives us the strength for the whole year to do our service, kula, the entire year, shenimshechet al yedei ha'kriya b'torah b'shabbat Bereishit, which comes from reading in the Torah on the first Shabbat in the year, shehi Shabbat klalit, which is a general Shabbat, as the previous Rebbe said, that the way that you set yourself up on Shabbat Bereishit, so it goes the whole year. So then he goes into a very beautiful thing that we haven't got time for, that in the beginning of the Torah it speaks about heaven and earth. At the beginning God created heaven and earth. Now there you have the same thing again. Heaven is the upper spiritual level and earth is the lower practical level. And so the whole of life is really the interplay of these two dimensions. Davening is that interface. So he talks about davening as well. But davening, the beginning of the davening, Psukah de Zimra, we're talking about nature. We're talking about nature, as it were, discovering the godliness in nature. And then we transcend that. We go higher and higher up into the blessings before the Shema, where we're talking about the angels. It's already a spiritual realm, and that's where we say the Shema. And that's the four rungs of the ladder. So it's a very, very beautiful discourse about our lives in the world and the way in which there are these two dimensions of the upper unity and the lower unity, the Shema and Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto L'Olam Va'ed, and the way in which the fact that in the Torah is nature as well as mitzvah is because it's through nature that we fulfill our role as human beings and as Jewish people, connecting the world to God and revealing the miraculous and the holy in every aspect of life.
Mechai. Thank you. What's this? Kefit gam, kafkof, moch, admor.
That means kapit gam kvod kdushat mori v'chami. Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok was his father-in-law. Okay.